Rachel is at, of course, at the Earth Institute at Columbia University. I think she's going to take us to Africa for quite a bit of our talk, and there are some very important issues there. So, Cheryl, over to you. And I will shout at 5 minutes.
Thank you, David, and also for the organizers of this symposium. As David put it, we have to really talk about feeding the world without destroying the planet, and also really have a science-based discussion about fertilizers. And so hopefully today I can take you through some of that. And thank you for coming early. I haven't even had a complete cup of coffee yet, so hopefully I can speak fast enough to get through my talk in time. So how do we do page down? There we go. So, okay, thanks. So I'm at Columbia University, the Earth Institute at Columbia University, perhaps one of the most urban of universities. And so whenever we speak about fertilizers, students invariably get up and say, why are you talking about fertilizers? We need to go organic. And they have heard about the too much nitrogen and the cascade of consequences. This is from Jim Galloway. All the things about smog, forest acidification, eutrophication, global warming, and the ozone hole. Those are all impacts of nitrogen, much of it from fertilizer production and fertilizer use, but overuse. And so let's look at the world in general and the use of nitrogen. And this is a paper that was done by Peter Vitusek and a group of us. Mark David in the back is a co-author on this, and Fuso Zhang, who is not here but being represented, also an author. And basically this is just partial nutrient budgets, the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus, well, this is just the nitrogen, put in by synthetic or mineral fertilizers plus manures, and the amount taken off by harvest. And so the partial nutrient budget, you'll see in China, there's an excess of over 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And we'll hear more about that today and what's being done about it. The U.S. has been working hard to sort of get this more in balance. And in Africa, which I'm going to talk about, here's an example from Western Kenya, the soil is actually being mined of nutrients because of lack of inputs of manure or compost or mineral fertilizers. So I'm going to try to focus more on this last column here on the too little nitrogen. So nitrogen fertilizer use worldwide, kilograms per hectare from Potter and Ramankuti. Just again, these low levels, Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, is very low, and those numbers, that's 1 to 3 kilograms per hectare. Just so you can see, numbers a bit better, worldwide averages, the Netherlands is close to 600, and then as you start dropping off, you see South Africa, the highest for sub-Saharan Africa, but if you look down the line, most of these are below 10. And this has been going on for a long time, and that's why you find this mining of nitrogen, phosphorus, and other nutrients from the soils. This is from IFDC, just again to show nutrient depletion. This is total nutrients, kilograms per hectare, the dark areas. And the point is, it's not getting better, it's actually getting worse. And probably over the last 5 to 10 years, some countries might be bringing that a bit less negative, but not the continent as a whole. So, what are the consequences of this continual nutrient mining from the soils? We've heard about the impacts of too much nitrogen. What about too little nitrogen, phosphorus, and other nutrients? So I have a hypothesis that we've published, and it just sort of looks at agriculture without proper management. In this case, I'm talking about nutrient replenishment, whether it be organic or mineral fertilizer, leading to environmental degradation. Too much has environmental degradation, but also too little does. Soil organic matter goes down, the soil surface isn't covered, there's erosion, and general degradation of the soil. Declining productivity, leading to malnutrition and illnesses, so labor productivity goes way down, and it's a vicious negative cycle. I'll try to show you some data today for parts of that hypothesis. So this was a paper by Liu in 2010 in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And a summary, there's a lot of data in this graph, but what it is he looked at the amount of nitrogen applied, so sort of looking at those global levels, and then he looked at the efficiencies of uptake into the crop and consumption, and looked at how much protein people need or how much nitrogen people need for nutritional benefits. And so nitrogen scarcity down there, it's less than 9 kilograms per hectare per year. That means there's just far too little nitrogen being applied to get enough nitrogen into crops or livestock to have enough nitrogen intake. And stress is 9 to 15, no stress. So again, if you looked at that earlier map about where nitrogen fertilizer is and you look at it and you convert it to nitrogen equivalents and protein uptake by populations, you'll see that most of sub-Saharan Africa is in a stress zone. There is just not enough nitrogen applied to get it into food for people to eat. So what is that consequence? All right, we've talked about the fertilizer applications. I've already seen this shown about 4 times, a similar graph during the meeting. But sub-Saharan Africa is stuck at about a ton of cereal per hectare. All right, this is 12 different grains averaged across cereal crops averaged across sub-Saharan Africa, still stuck, 1 ton per hectare. As opposed to South Asia, has gone up to almost 3, all developing countries up to about 3, U.S. up to 10 or more. And so it's really an enormous difference in what's happening in terms of nutrient management and its impacts on crops. And this is just what it is in terms of food production per capita. It's actually going down in sub-Saharan Africa. In terms of the environment, you don't keep the soil covered. This is an amazing picture in Rwanda. A colleague of mine just happened to pass through right after a rain. This is after planting, and just enormous erosion going off of the hillside. Nutrient depletion leads to decreasing soil organic matter, pests and diseases. Surface sealing in some areas is enormous if the soil isn't covered. And compaction. These are all problems that happen, I would contend, is a problem of not enough nitrogen being added or other nutrients to these soils. So unhealthy soils, unhealthy people. Pedro Sanchez, sitting in the back of the room, and M.S. Swaminathan came up with a paper that was actually published in The Lancet, a health journal. And it was really making these links between unhealthy soils, in this case, where, again, there's not enough nutrients being added, and the consequences for human health, and in this case, stunting. So stunting is one of the best indicators of chronic malnutrition. It's size or height for age, and it's just for the first 2 years of life, children don't receive enough calories and nutrients on a long-term basis. And so that is one of the best indicators of chronic malnutrition, not famine, but chronic malnutrition. And so this is just to show a bit of the health. So if you look at IFPRI's Global Hunger Index, it includes stunting measures and other types of food security issues. A new report came out just last week, but I didn't have a chance to get that into this slide, but it doesn't look much better. In fact, it looks worse due to food prices and fertilizer prices. But again, trying to make a connection between that global crop nitrogen stress from Liu and the hunger index. Again, you look where the stippled area are down here, and you look up here, and they overlap. Now, Liu did a correlation, and it's not a fantastic correlation between nitrogen applied and the global malnutrition, but it is high enough to warrant further investigation. There are other factors involved, water quality and diarrhea, other illnesses and such, but this, to me, is convincing enough that there is a very good connection between fertilizer application or nutrient application and hunger and malnutrition. So I'm going to talk now about a project we've been involved in the last 7 years or so. And this is African Green Revolution. Metete Bukunda in the room is involved in that, and many other people. But basically it is to just say, okay, let's try to get a green revolution to Africa. And agriculture is a part of it. In that part, it means improved seed. It means fertilizers and nutrients, organic and or inorganic, as well as water management, markets. Nutrition is a large part of it, and the environment, policies and politics. So it's trying to take lessons learned from the Asian Green Revolution and incorporate these into the African Green Revolution. We've applied them in a project called the Millennium Villages Project. The Millennium Villages Project is looking to how to take recommendations for achieving the Millennium Development Goals, and I can go over those later if people have questions, and to achieve them in 14 different sites in sub-Saharan Africa. So we wanted to say, so how do you achieve the Millennium Development Goals? We took the recommendations and went all the way from the humid forest margins of Ghana, where there's still 75% forest, to areas in Malawi and Kenya that were deforested 100 years ago, very few trees in some of these places. Goes all the way from tree crops to camels and pastoralism to fisher systems. So we wanted to see, what can you do? There are many interventions, and these all come out of the UN Millennium Project. There were many task forces, and so we just took the recommendations. Agriculture, it's basically seed and fertilizer support, or subsidies, the bad word. But basically, you want to get nutrients into the system, you've got to jumpstart it with mineral nutrients, as far as we're concerned. Improved germplasm, again, working with local systems. These all have to be localized to each site. What kind of nutrients are limiting? What are the rates? What are the best germplasm available? And then extensive training, on-farm training by extension officers. Many of these sites have never seen extension officers, so we've really done that. And then crop diversification, one, for nutritional quality, but also for cash income. So just these are some of the rates of nitrogen applied in four of the sites at baseline. We do extensive surveys to find out what was happening before the project started and after. And then the intervention, the recommendations by the local extension services is what we used the first several years. So you can see in Tanzania, they went from less than 2 kilograms of nitrogen to 80. Malawi, 26 to 86. And this is what the recommendation is across Malawi and their national subsidy program. Ghana went from zero, it's a humid forest zone, to 45. And Nigeria, northern Nigeria in this case, 28 to 120. So this is a summary of 5 years. It's a little bit complicated. I won't go through all the details. But we have pre-intervention or baseline yields. Some are about 2. Many are 1 or less. And then we have the intervention with the recommended rates. And you can see we've doubled or quadrupled yields consistently for 5 years. The red line is a control for each year, and there are problems with some of it, but I can also go into that later. But the bottom line is, with some simple, very simple recommendations applied, and this is across large areas. Each of these sites has about 40,000 people. The whole project covers 500,000 people. So it's not just a few farmers and a few sites. These are whole populations that are served by these interventions. But even though we're doing well in terms of producing more food, we're not doing very well in terms of nitrogen use efficiencies. So keep that in mind as we move forward. Now let's bring out this improved food production to stunting. And this is a paper that's in press. It's actually going to be out, I think, in the next week or so, where we looked at the stunting levels for children under the age of 2 at baseline and then at 3 years after interventions. Now, some of the sites, we've cut stunting by 50%. And this is in 3 years. In other sites, not as much, but those are usually the sites that had the lower stunting rates to begin with. But across the board, it's been 30 to 35% a reduction in stunting. We had the paper declined from 2 journals saying this is absolutely impossible to achieve these results. But the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition has accepted it. They say it's because you're doing everything. You provide food, cleaner water source, and health interventions. And so hunger and malnutrition is not just an agricultural issue, but it is a driving force in many of these areas. If you don't increase food production, you will not achieve these stunting things. Many nutritionists, it's one vitamin A or iron supplementation, but it's the whole thing. It's the calories that go with it and everything. So I think our little diagram of poor agricultural production, declining productivity, environmental degradation, illness, malnutrition, I think we're starting to turn that back into a virtuous positive cycle. More data will be collected over the next 5 years. We just got funding for another 5 years, and we'll continue to monitor all of these. And as the subsidies are decreased and die out, it will be interesting to see if people can still continue to use fertilizers. And this is, again, just to show that stunting has actually increased across Africa the last 25 years. And so that's why we really believe the data we have, and we have a whole health team working on that. All right, so I think I've made a fairly good point about using mineral fertilizers in Africa. We're not even using that much. But so why not using organics? And so I'd like to address that, because I firmly believe I spent the first 15 years of my career working on organic inputs for agriculture and basically didn't touch mineral fertilizers, thinking this was the way to go. And now I'm swinging to the mineral fertilizer side, but it's really the combination we have to look at. But let's be realistic about what can happen. And so these are studies done by ICRAF. Roland Buresh was part of these studies, and Pedro and other people, where in western Kenya there was a huge pilot program to introduce biomass transfer, leaves with lots of nutrients in them, decomposing quickly, and improve fallows, leguminous tree fallows. It was a long-term project, a lot of efforts put into it. And then a student went back and selected 120 of those pilot farmers, and these were all farmers that they were introduced and using them, and looked at adoption rates, or the number of farmers practicing them in 2006, which is about 10 years after most of these things had been introduced. And though these aren't bad adoption rates, they're not large, okay? They're 50% in 2002, and then they went down, all right? So the rates, they're not terribly low, but it's not like we're seeing over half of the population adopting them. And perhaps there is a decrease in this. The reasons cited for why people had not adopted it or were disadopting this were labor requirements, the land requirement to grow the improved fallows. If you have small farms, these farms are half a hectare in size. You really are risk averse and don't want to actually take half of your farm out of production. And that's also this whole issue about forfeiting a cropping season. And in some cases, there were land tenure issues. And those that did adopt actually used it on very small areas of their farm. So even if we look at 40% adoption as being good, you go around, you don't see a landscape covered by improved fallows. It's just small bits of different farms. Okay, so now let's look at the amount of nutrients required if we want to achieve 3 tons of maize. And this is sort of the goal for the African Green Revolution in the first phase, going from 1 to 3 tons of grain. So you'll also have 3.3 tons of stover. It needs 85 kilograms of nitrogen. These are different sources of organics at 4 tons, and I just wanted to give you the amount in high-quality manure. Well, first of all, there isn't high-quality manure in this place. There aren't even enough livestock. You'd probably have to collect it from 100 households to get enough for one farm. Maize stover, certainly not enough, so recycling stover isn't going to do it. The only one here that really satisfies it is a leguminous tree fallow, Lucina, and that's the only additional new source of nitrogen. The others are just recycling. Okay, so we also have to realize you have to get more nutrients into these landscapes, not just recycling them or moving them around the landscape. And this is another one in Zambia where the farm sizes are larger. It looks much better there in terms of adoption of improved fallows. And it's by wealth category, so there are constraints. Poor households, probably smaller farms. But anyway, again, the adoption rates will depend on where you are in farm size, labor issues, and things like that. So organics are nice, but we have to look at the constraints to these smallholder systems. So hopefully I've convinced you that mineral fertilizers are necessary as a jump start to many of these areas that have not had sufficient nutrients. Organics can help, but you need organics that actually bring in nutrients to the system, nitrogen in particular through nitrogen fixation. But there are many constraints to widespread adoption of these organics. So we are working now with these sites in 14 countries as well as other programs going on and several next steps. One is to look at how to increase nitrogen use efficiency. A lot of it's just improved agronomy. Again, not rocket science, it's stuff that's out there. But now that crop yields have improved, how to improve the efficiency of use, and also to start really trying to look at combining organics and inorganics. Now that there are more nutrients on farms, there's more biomass on farms. So you can actually start adding more organics, and farmers will, especially if subsidies go down and the price of fertilizers continue to increase. We expect to find that we'll get more organics incorporated into this. But we're going to look at incentive studies also. What are incentives? Some carbon offset projects or things like that that would actually get farmers more motivated to increase organics. We're also going to address the environment side. I don't think we're harming the environment. I actually think we're improving the environment by applying fertilizer. But we are already tracking nitrous oxide emissions. We're starting leaching studies just so that we can show, and maybe in some places we will find that there is leaching on some of the sandier soils, but we are going to actually be tracking that just so we can show it. And we need better input data. So we're gathering data that are used for crop models, for hydrological watershed models, and atmospheric. Because there's just the data you look in, most of the models people being used are not from Africa, or they're for 3 or 4 sites. So we need better data. And it's strategic site selection to get the type of data you need for these models. And then in the end, we would like to help inform both nitrogen and nutrient management and policy decisions. How do you incorporate the environment as well as human nutrition into this whole program of using mineral fertilizers for food security? Thank you very much.
Wait here, there's time for some questions. You kept the time extremely well, thank you. Any questions or comments, please? Yeah, Peter?
Cheryl, what are some of the infrastructure issues related to nitrogen fertilizer? I mean, just getting the materials there.
Well, yeah, there are issues, and the density of roads in Africa is only 10% of what it was in India at the beginning of the Asian Green Revolution. So there are. And somebody asked me that the other day, but in Malawi, which probably has less kilometers of road per person than many countries, the government and with private companies has these places where farmers go to pick up fertilizer. And so they get trucks and take them to these central points. But people get it. They get there and they get the fertilizer to their farm. So if fertilizers are available, they'll get them. Oh, yes. Yeah, it's mostly imported. There was more production before than there is now. But there is some countries now are really seriously discussing production of fertilizers in Africa. I saw Cliff was here. Maybe Cliff, do you have any comments on that? But I do know that AGRA, it's the foundation set up by the Gates and Rockefeller foundations, they have huge regional fertilizer groups that they're looking at. The countries go as a group to import fertilizer to bring down prices and things like that. There are companies actually even building roads from ports because they realize there's a huge market for fertilizers. So companies are investing in public-private partnerships to start building roads.
Yep.
Can you talk about combining organic and inorganic? Do you have any data on how much it increased end use efficiency?
I will give my answer as somebody who worked on that for many years. It depends on the type of organic you use. If it's slow decomposing,
you talk about combination. How much more do you think of inorganic ad is being used? Can you combine inorganic with organic?
Again, I think it's quite variable with the type of organic you add. I'm not trying to skirt around the issue, but all organics are not created equal in terms of their productivity, how they will enhance. Now, people say these many non-responsive soils need more organics, and I'm convinced that they do. There's very little biological activity. But I've seen numbers, across the whole board on how much they would increase the uptake of the mineral fertilizer. Sorry to skirt around it, but I think it's a complex answer. In this case, they are. I have other data that I didn't have time for today, but we're actually increasing the productivity of the land, the farm, and it allows farmers to do other things with parts of their land, like planting trees on areas of their farm that were marginal for crop production.
So you're discussing that within that context?
Yeah, and I don't think there's leaching. If there is, I think it's quite minor, but again, we're starting to measure those. The nitrous oxide emissions are extremely small. They're less than 0.5% of the nitrogen applied. And I just think the bugs and the plants are grabbing onto that nitrogen and holding onto it very strongly.
You had mentioned relatively low efficiency of use of the nitrogen supply, Cheryl, and when you're in a proper situation, you apply some. Inherently, we think that the first increment is going to give you the greatest efficiency of use, but you're not achieving that. And so I was wondering, are the constraints that you see to that efficiency, are they inadequate balanced nutrition? Are they microbial imbalance? Are they physical properties that are complicated that efficiency?
I think they're poor agronomic practices. Simply as that. And we're looking at the other issues, but if you go out and see it, it's plant spacing, it's timing of applications, timing of planting. I mean, these are really labor-constrained environments. So I think it's just getting the agronomy right first before we do too much other fancy things.
One final question.
Yeah, when you go into your organics, it seems like you're going to, especially like you were saying, you're going to have to start putting on more phosphorus. Are you going to just be swapping out having to add more phosphorus versus... Are you trading off phosphorus for nitrogen?
Well, I don't think it's a trade-off. I think you need phosphorus anyway. I just talked about nitrogen because we have more data, and it is the primary limiting nutrient throughout sub-Saharan Africa. Phosphorus is also a co-limiting factor in some of these very clay soils. So phosphorus is also needed. So I don't want to just say I'm just promoting nitrogen. It was just the element I chose. For any kind of legume, you're going to have to get phosphorus in there to get the nitrogen fixation going, but then it's can be recycled by these trees we're showing fairly efficiently. And it's not large amounts you need to get the nitrogen fixation moving.
Sort of Liebig's law of the limiting, really, isn't it? Yeah, thank you very much. We'll have to move on. Thank you very much indeed.